Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, November 21st, 2009. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host today. I want to begin by making an important announcement. On Wednesday, December 3rd at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Lyndon LaRouche will deliver his next webcast, and that can be heard live on the website LaRouchePAC.com. As most of you know, these webcasts have been crucial in shaping the political and economic debate in the United States throughout this year. LaRouche's insight into both the ongoing disintegration of the global economic and financial system, as well as into the failed policies of the Obama administration, has been the one source of hope for the people of the United States who otherwise would be stuck with a completely insane president and a dysfunctional, corrupt, and up to this point, cowardly Congress. Mr. LaRouche's webcast will come as the alternative that he's been fighting for, that of a new Bretton Woods financial system based on an alliance of four powers, the United States, Russia, India, and China, has been coming into focus, especially after the major trade and infrastructure deals made between Russia and China last month, as well as further dialogue at last week's economic summit in Asia. Joining us on the program today will be Jacques Cheminade, who's a longtime collaborator of Lyndon LaRouche, the chairman of Solidarité et Progrès in France, and a former candidate for president of France. I recently had the pleasure of spending 2 weeks in France with Jacques, during which we made numerous public meetings, as well as meetings with economists, officials in government, the farm sector, the military, and others. While I presented the story of the ongoing mass strike ferment in the United States and the role of the LaRouche movement in shaping that fight, Jacques continued his campaign to restore a sense of dignity to France, a nation which has at least temporarily lost its national sovereignty and is presently subordinated to the Tower of Babel known as the European Union. Also joining us today will be Megan Roulard from the LaRouche Youth Movement. So Jacques and Megan, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hello.
Good to be with you.
So Jacques, I'd like to begin by looking at the direction of the global economy. As perhaps the only remaining figure in French politics who really understands physical economy, I'd like to open by having you give us your assessment of the state of the world economy today.
It's an absolute disaster. It's an absolute disaster because what you have is the city of London and Wall Street against reality. And it's no more outside from reality, it's against reality, against the population and committed to the destruction of the population. It's what you see in the organizing of the Copenhagen December 6th Global Warming Summit, where the United Nations, the Fund for Population, has deliberately said openly that, there should be a major offensive against population in the name of solving climate change. And even Le Monde, the official or semi-official French newspaper, is shocked by that. And like the issue of Thursday 19 said, oh, it is now said that the birth in the world would threaten the weather. So this is too much. Even them said that it's too much, that it's unbelievable that the Danish government and also the United Nations Fund for Population Activities would go that way. So there is a state of shock in the country. And you see what is in the world system is the fact that you have money spread in favor of all the financial oligarchs. So they get the money for free from the US government and the Fed and other governments in the world. In the Western world, they get all this money, and they speculate against the dollar. It's a dollar carry trade. So they destroy the United States, they destroy its manpower, they destroy its industry, and make money out of it. So they make a lot of money out of it in those days.
Well, Josh,
so it's a crime. It's not only a crime against humanity, but it's a crime against nations. And this is what's going on.
You mentioned the climate conference, and we can come back to this later, but one thing that stands out, at present, in spite of the new evidence that's being brought forward about the fraud of the arguments of global warming, it appears as though the United States, President Obama, this is what he brought up in China, I assume as well most of the European Union remains committed to the idea of the carbon tax and so on. Is that not true?
Yes, sure. Jean Tirole, who is a French behaviorist, and he's looking for the Nobel Prize. He wants to get the Nobel Prize. So Jean Tirole has published a report for the government, for the Council of Advisors of the Prime Minister, calling for the Copenhagen summit to follow the following guidelines. First, recognize that this tax is absolutely mandatory for everybody. Second, that there should be a market, a world market, of pollution rights. And Rocard, for example, the French former Prime Minister Rocard, stressed that 100 more financial arrangements, 100 more contracts have been 100 times more than the real pollution. So this is insanity, and Goldman Sachs and the City of London are behind it. So there is, Tirole is calling for a world market of pollution rights with a all-encompassing policy against those polluting the environment. And he calls for a systematic control through satellites and a world governance to impose the law of, in fact, population control, which is no more population control, but it's population reduction. And in fact, it's no population reduction, it's genocide.
Well, while this seems to be the general attitude in Europe and the United States, the developments recently coming from Russia and China point in a different direction. I know that you've been following very closely the trade agreements that were signed by Putin and Wen Jiabao and the follow-up to that. How is this viewed in Europe and in France in particular? Is there a sense that there's a potential way out of this crisis other than bailouts and more speculative bubbles?
Yes, there is a sense of it, definitely. And more and more publicly shared. For example, the declaration of Hui Liru saying that the future is in China and that quite unexpectedly the economic crisis have in a very short time placed China in the center of world politics, this is really understood in France by many people. But the danger is the following, is that this is in the framework of arrangements that Europeans have the illusion to organize between France, Germany on one side, and Russia and China without the United States. And this is played by the British, who wants to create a situation where there is a break in any chance to have the four powers together. So what's happening is that you have this sense that the future is in the Pacific, but it takes forms of being, because of Obama's policy, and also because of the British operations, Obama is a British operation, it takes a form of going adrift from the United States. So this is very, very dangerous, because it tends to create a situation where potentially you have these arrangements between the Europeans and China. For example, former Prime Minister Raffarin, Jean-Pierre Raffarin, former French Prime Minister, is in China now, and he is in Beijing for an important European-Chinese meeting, and he's meeting former Prime Minister Wen Jiabao. Also, there is a memorandum of agreement signed between the UMP, the French Majority Party, and the Chinese Communist Party. And at the same time, Putin is supposed to be soon in Paris for the celebration of the year of the French-Russian friendship, France in Russia and Russia in France. And I met a lot of people who see that as an opportunity and a necessity for the French policy together with Germany. But the big but is the United States, because this is not seen as something that is done together with United States. And if Obama continues bullshitting, that's a real danger. If Obama continues with his criminal policy, it will create disorder and chaos in the world.
So Jacques, what you're saying then is that there is obviously some gains being made by the British in their plan to dump the dollar and dramatically reduce the status of the United States. Are there people in France who have some indication or some idea of what it would mean to lose the dollar?
Yes, there are certain people who are saying this is a chaos and catastrophe for the whole world economy. But you have at the same time an absolute disaster at the European level. Herman Van Rompuy, a Belgian politician, has been elected as the leader of the European Union. The good news, that it is not Tony Blair.
Right.
But the bad news, he's the lowest common denominator in Europe, and he's supported by Sarkozy and Merkel, who at the same time have agreed to appoint as Foreign Affairs Minister of the European Union, Catherine Ashton. So the Baroness Ashton of Upholland, appointed by Tony Blair. She's a Tony Blair supporter from the world go. She organized with Tony Blair the New Labour. She's associate to the fight against the nuclear industry in England. And she's involved with the charities of Prince Charles.
Huh.
And she's absolutely pro-Lisbon Treaty. So that's a big danger, because what are Sarkozy and Merkel in Germany going to do? Nothing, because they are handcuffed by the European treaties, which forbid to issue public credit. They prohibit a credit system. They forbid the issuance of credit to both European and national institutions. And as long as Europe would be under this British monetarist rule, forget it.
Now, I want to come back to that in a few minutes, but I would like to...
Despite some signs of sanity here and there.
Well, I want to come back to the situation in France and Europe in general in just a moment, but just to get back to this question, I guess historically there's been a kind of a French role, at least in the recent period, in trade with China, also some with Russia. To what extent at this point is this then decoupled from a collaboration with the United States and just the idea that France can sell, for example, nuclear plants to China? Or, I mean, is it on that level just bilateral?
That's precisely the danger. The British are playing that game, divide to rule among the powers, and trying to use, to get advantages of France and Germany, to use that as to entice the Russians into some type of cooperation that would be seen as separate from the cooperation with the United States. So it's very urgent, and this is what I can say from our standpoint here in Europe. Nothing can come out of Europe because of European treaties handcuffing the governments. But what is absolutely necessary right now, right away, is that the presidential administration of the United States follows what Lyndon LaRouche has told it to follow the LaRouche program, the LaRouche approach. And it's very interesting that French mayors are starting to sign the Natalia Vitrenko Elgazep LaRouche declaration to make the LaRouche proposals a matter of public discussion and organize governments and people around the world to support that approach. If that is not followed, we are entering into a new dark age. That it's clear with the Copenhagen Conference.
Now, Jacques, in your discussions, whether it's with mayors or economists or political figures, when they start falling for these illusions that somehow there's an option without the United States, and then you talk about this four-power agreement, do they think that's possible? Do they think that would be a good idea? Is it now the point that people are saying under Obama it's not possible?
Well, they think under Obama and under Sarkozy and under Merkel, this is what they think. They think that all these politicians are narcissists in a strict Freudian sense, or worse, and these narcissists are trying to appear as the best they can to the public opinion and are not at all concerned with the fate of their populations.
Well, I want to bring Megan Roulard in now because she was at a discussion with Lyndon LaRouche this morning, because one of the questions that comes up, it was at the last webcast, is, well, isn't the Four Powers Agreement somewhat exclusionary? Now, Jacques just began to talk about why Europe under Lisbon can't play an independent role. Megan, I understand today Lynn was talking about the problems with the Nations of Ibero-America. Can you tell us what Lynn was saying today?
Yeah, it was a very interesting discussion. As people might know, people might be surprised to hear that LaRouche's four-power program is Russia, China, India, and the United States. There is discussion from other circles who are actually enemy circles from the standpoint of what we're trying to do, who would say, leave out the United States. Four powers is Brazil, Russia, China, and India. And this morning, LaRouche elaborated why it is that the countries of South America are not part of the four-power agreement that he's proposing. Although he made the point, and he made the point in his webcast too, that countries in South America, as well as smaller countries in Asia, countries in Europe, can become part of that, he elaborated, well, why is it that they aren't just included immediately in the conception? And he said, well, should we say that the countries in South America, Mexico among them, are hopeless cases? And he said, well, it's probably more realistic. Even though in the long term they're not hopeless cases, it's probably more realistic to say that they are. And then he went into this discussion of why they aren't part of his four-power project. And he got at it in a very interesting way, which might seem surprising to some people, which was, you might almost say a switching of gears to a discussion of human creativity, mm-hmm. and a discussion of music, and really that this, when a human being is struggling to communicate ideas, for example, as in musical, as in communicating ideas in music, that human beings are creatures, we are creatures of ideas in that sense. And what he developed was the idea that if you have a culture, he specifically focused on Mexico, if you have a national culture which for too long has not fought for the development of their population as anything other than really beasts, which he said, look, you did have a fight in Mexico in the 1980s that he was involved in with President López Portillo. You had a fight to develop the Mexican nation and a commitment to develop the Mexican population from the standpoint of the physical economy. But there was a sense that, no, our population, we're human beings, and we don't deserve to be treated like beasts, which is what the current IMF policies, et cetera, are doing. He said, but look, in a sense, it's been now how many years since Mexico has actually fought that same fight at the level of the presidency, for example. And he's made the same point about Brazil, that Brazil is really, when you get down to it, when you go to a city like Sao Paulo, that it's a bestial culture. And that really what you have in coming out of China, although China admittedly has a very poor population, there's a commitment right now at the highest level of the Chinese government to develop the poorer sectors of the Chinese population. And that really what you want to do is focus on nations which have a commitment to seeing their population as something more than just, labor, right? Cheap labor.
Megan, I'd like to get Jacques' thoughts on this because this is quite interesting.
Right.
Jacques, of course, has some great insight in the situation in Ibero-America, but also this goes back, I guess, to what you were saying about the Lisbon Treaty, that the government of France has not been fighting for its population. What do you think about what Megan just said from Lynn's discussion today?
There is something very important in what she said, which is the communication of a human being to a human being. And you have not only the Lisbon Treaty in Europe, but an animal sense of culture in the established elites. For example, I have before my eyes a declaration of one of the main directors of research in the Atomic Energy Commissariat, which is the highest French authority in the nuclear field. And he says that what is fundamental today are discoveries of Galileo, the break of Galileo with past science towards modern science, and his great achievement is to have seen that the laws of physics should be written in the form of mathematical equations. And the idea that the world, which changes, it's so diverse, is structured by invisible laws of which the mathematics are the language. And then he adds, and a lot of people add that Darwin is the second revolution, because Darwin understood that the human being is not a special species, but it's involved in this general motion. And he says there is scientific research at the CERN, which is this big thing where they try to reestablish the conditions of the Big Bang to recreate the temperature and the high density energy at the beginning of the universe. So these people are absolutely insane. They have absolutely no sense of what is really a culture of discovery and a culture of respect of human life. So this is what you have in Europe. And the culture of the oligarchy is not only in the employment policy, in the financial policy, but it's also in this crazy intellectual scene, which is not only French, but it's European.
Well, and then I guess this gets at the deeper question then for what you're trying to do in France, because I had the opportunity to spend some time with the LaRouche youth movement there, and you're replicating the program of the curriculum in the United States, the work on Kepler, the work with Bach. To what extent, Jacques, is there a sense that what Megan just said and what you just said, is it clear to anyone that the total existentialist viewpoint is the dominant one, that man is a beast? I mean, how do you break through with that with young people?
Well, there is a revolt against the elites. For example, I have also before my eyes a guy who wrote the message to in internet, and it's reproduced in thousands and hundreds of thousands of copies in internet. Throw out your TVs and your packs of beer. Take your family for walks in the woods. Reconciliate yourself with your former enemies and talk to your woman, to your wives. So there is a rage. The mayors are enraged. The state is dumping on them responsibilities, assistance to jobless, for example, payment of the administrative staff in schools, roads. National roads are transformed into regional and county roads. So the state does that without giving them the money to deal with these new responsibilities. And the mayors are discovering that what we had said in 1995, in 2002, and now recently in 2006 and 2007, it's true. And also they want to reduce the number of elected officials from regions and departements, the French counties, and because of budget cuts. But in fact, they want to reduce your position of the base, of the political leaders of the base, to measures against the population. So they want to have a direct influence in their anti-social austerity policies. And I met a mayor the day before yesterday, and he said, "I had not signed for you. I am a Christian in spirit and a socialist at heart. But the Christians are no more Christians and the socialists are no more socialists. So next time I would have to sign for you." So that's what's happening. At the same time, you see the crisis is taking the same form as in the United States. There are certain social protections, but all this is breaking apart. For example, there are more and more stealing in the supermarkets. But what people steal, they don't steal alcohol or cameras or whatever. They steal food, they steal milk, and they steal food for babies. This is what the, and it's the middle, it's a mainstream mother that steals in the supermarkets at this point. And the very poor people go around the supermarkets trying to get, or the markets, trying to get the outdated food, the used-by-date food. So you have this situation which is creating a lot of anger. For example, Sarkozy is at less than 40% rate of approval. When he was elected, he was at 70. So it's the same drop as Obama in the United States. And at the same time, people see that Christine Lagarde, the economic minister, is crowned as queen of the city. The Financial Times, a jury of experts organized by the Financial Times, has crowned Christine Lagarde queen of the city. So there is a revolt. But and I have to do two things. I think two things have to be done at the same time that I try to do, and with a certain success at this point. But things go very, very fast, so we have to convince everybody to go as fast as history develops and unleashes. We have to transform the rage, which takes, as the person said at the beginning, escape from reality, go in the woods, make peace with your enemies, to transform this rage, this flight forward or this flight backward, into a positive anger. And to, it's for that that together with LIM in France, we have distributed 1 million leaflets dedicated to the coming anger, to the coming anger in the population. And many people told us, but it's not the coming anger. I'm angry right now. I'm very angry. So it's very interesting. We have a lot of answers, a lot of people calling. Mayors, four mayors signed, as I said, the Vitrenko Elgazep Larouche Declaration for the LIN program. And it's very, very interesting to see that unleashing. It's a bit slow sometimes, but suddenly it accelerates. In an oligarchical country, you have these motions back and forth and these sudden accelerations. So in France, you have the direct opposition between the old Republican factor, represented by somebody like De Gaulle or Mendes France in French policies. Mendes France was a friend of Roosevelt. And on the other side, the old oligarchical presidents elected since Pompidou. So you have a sense among these mayors that there should be a change in the elite. The people that have made a career, that are all the time on TV, we don't want them anymore.
And there's been some real attacks on that. We'll come back to that in a moment. I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to The LaRouche Show, which is live every Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time in the United States on LaRouchePub.com. Also, I want to again remind people that Wednesday, December 3rd, will be Lyndon LaRouche's next webcast. It will be 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Start organizing people for that right now, because this is coming at the height of the crisis. We're going to hear more from Jacques in terms of developments inside France, which are very interesting, and get at this question of the anger against the elites. But I wanted to come back to Megan on something, because, Megan, you've been working out of the basement. And I know some of our listeners are always intrigued by the basement, because they think that you guys are locked up down there and involved in some kind of Frankenstein-type experiments. But what I'd like you to talk about is just what Jacques was discussing, the question of providing hope. Clearly, the Four Powers Agreement is an important step toward a new monetary system, but that's not the goal. The goal that Lyndon LaRouche has identified is putting a manned mission on Mars and having a colonization of Mars. So what can you tell us about the work that's gone on recently on that from your work in the basement?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of what's happened recently is people attending different events going on in D.C. Or there was just a recent event in Texas, which are a lunar conference that happened in Houston. And what we're finding is that this question of space exploration and colonization is very much on the table right now, especially amongst the four powers, but more explicitly, it was really outlined in the recent agreements between Russia and China. And I mean, you know, since the 90s, for example, Lyndon LaRouche and his wife Helga had developed a proposal for called the Eurasian Land Bridge, which really is an idea that is much older than that. That goes back to the Trans-Siberian Railroad, for example, for the development of the interior of the Eurasian landmass through transportation networks, power grids, all sorts of things aimed at really populating that landmass and developing it in a way which hadn't been done, which is some of the substance of the recent agreements between China and Russia, developing a more extensive rail network in eastern Russia, the development of nuclear power in China, for example. But one of the other things that was outlined, I think even explicitly by the Russian President Medvedev, and LaRouche has been very critical in the past of the Russian policy of just being an exporter of raw materials. But more recently, the Russian policy has been actually, you know, realizing what LaRouche has said, we can't survive being an exporter of raw materials. We have to focus on actual development policies, focusing on nuclear power and explicitly a space policy. So it's interesting that recently, in addition to the work that we're doing here to figure out how we want to get there and what we want to do when we get there, to Mars, for example, that this is a feature of the current breakthrough that was made in agreements between China and Russia. And in a sense, it also gives more, something like the Eurasian Land Bridge, the idea of developing the interior of that huge landmass, you know, there's even the question there of, well, why are you doing that? You know, it's good to have more people there, but the question of, you know, why this emphasis on why the high-tech features of it? And I mean, really, we're looking at developing the capability of Eurasia and the capability of industries in that part of the world. I mean, there's going to be a whole lot involved in us industrializing the moon and then colonizing Mars. And we're definitely not going to be able to do it if we don't have more of the types of the type of policy direction that's been outlined by the Russia-China agreement.
You know, I was on a radio program 2 days ago where the host, at a certain point after he listened to me discussing Lynn's ideas on the four powers and then also the developments in the last month, said, isn't it amazing? We're going to have to learn about the American system from the former communist nation of Russia and the still communist nation of China. They're teaching us American system economics.
Right.
Jacques, let me come back then to this question of the...
Because it's very interesting. I met one of the very important French firms involving in counseling abroad. So I was called by a guy who was formerly in the education sector, and now he's working in education exchanges between France, Africa, but mostly China and Russia. And he told me, you know, now is the Chinese that represent our values. And I can tell you the level of the Chinese students is much higher than the French or the American students. Why? Because most of them play piano or another instrument every day. Hmm. So they are taking seriously our classical culture while ourselves are not.
Right.
You know, except the work in the basement, which should irradiate much more.
Well, I had a meeting with an African ambassador in Berlin who was telling me that he was meeting with a German firm, a German engineering firm, and the German firm was saying, well, why do you have the Chinese build bridges and dams in your country when the German bridges and dams are so much better? And this ambassador said, well, the Chinese dams are actually being built whereas the German dams and bridges are only being built on paper.
Yeah, and the French, for example, the French nuclear industry, the disaster in Finland of the French EPR nuclear reactor, why? Because it was done with subcontracting and part of it with poor people coming from Eastern countries like Poland, organized without a program of what they, a sense of what they were doing, putting the holes in wrong place, doing a lot of work which was not prepared for them, and doing it not in the way you should prepare a nuclear reactor. So the ecologists said nuclear energy is bad, this is a proof of it. It's not. It's a proof that the financial system, should be a true credit system for the future, supporting nuclear energy. Without that, nuclear energy would never develop. And look at China. In China, they are facing the decrease of American demand and European demand. They are facing that they have made wrong investments in luxury goods inside China, in certain supermarkets or Carrefour or things like that. They are producing things that cannot be consumed in China and cannot be sold. So you have this aspect of the Chinese situation, where 900 billions have been thrown in the Chinese economy, with the result that part of it went to the Shanghai Stock Exchange, which went up by 75% since the beginning of the year, and the real estate prices have exploded in China. So with China alone, the thing cannot succeed. What is needed is the American, Russian, Chinese sense of space together with India to have this sense of space and developing the population, not throwing the money into ventures, but really developing the northern Arctic of Russia, Siberia, and inside China. And if not, if the Chinese understand it, that's why they are so interested by what LaRouche proposes. They see LaRouche as the only option for them, because they are very afraid to see the bubbles of the present monetary system exploding into China as a weapon of the British. That they understand. And some of them are talking to the French, who start to put more thinking into it.
Well, that of course means we've got to get a change in the United States. And I have a couple of questions for you, Jacques, on France, and then we'll have a little time at the end for back and forth. I know Megan said she had a couple of questions for you as well.
Uh-huh.
Look, when I was there, one of the things that was somewhat evident is that people on the surface still had a little bit of Obama mania. They were a little bit upset, at least they said they were upset to see us with the Obama, with the Hitler mustache. But once we had a discussion with them, they immediately made the connection between Sarkozy's fall in popularity and Obama. Now, we've seen with the Virginia and New Jersey elections that people are not supporting the president. We've seen the mass strike ferment in the United States. The polls show Obama's below 50%, but as Lyndon LaRouche has been emphasizing, it's much worse. There are some people who are still giving Obama a little bit of a pass, but they're really enraged at the Congress. Let me just ask you, first of all, to what extent, in your view, has the Obama mania in Europe dropped in intensity, and are people beginning to see the reality that you have no change with this administration? In fact, it's even worse in terms of going with Wall Street and City of London policy.
Well, what I'm saying is making its way that with the neocons of Bush, the job of London could not be done. Now, with the behaviorists of Obama, they try to do it, with the result that the United States is self-destroying because of what these people are doing with Obama. I think that what's opening their eyes is all the cuts in the health policy, the mammography, the cervical for cancer, and so on and so forth. These people are looking at it seriously now and seeing, wow, what Obama is doing is not what we were told. It's not what we expected. So there is a lot of these reactions. Maybe the mustache is too much, but maybe it was necessary. So people are going into that direction. And also, there are a lot of comments on what will happen if the system continues in the United States. What it said, and I have a few articles in the French press saying it, they would have to cut the wages in the United States. And because if there is this world competition and the British rules, the calculus, the statistical calculus and the estimations said that the average wage of the U.S. worker should be cut by 20% to reestablish the world equilibrium. So this cannot work, the French say, and to reduce population, as it is planned in the Copenhagen summit, is too much. So they are realizing what will happen, but they have to do something about the handcuffs. And they would never do it by themselves. I don't think at this point there will be a lot of anger in the population. We can muster a political movement with our youth, which would go deeper and deeper, and it's ongoing. But at the level of Merkel and Sarkozy, the thing won't be done except if there is a change in the United States.
Well, Jacques, the other thing that I saw while I was there was the beginning of what you might call a fairly advanced disintegration of the existing institutions. The indictment of Chirac, the conviction of Pasqua, an old enemy of ours, the completely silly contest between de Villepin and Sarkozy, calling each other names, demeaning the institution of the presidency. But what is going on inside French politics? It appears as though, same as here, that the institutions of the parties are disintegrating or corroding, the authority of these institutions are corroding. Is that the case?
Oh, yeah. For example, at the Congress of the Mayors, where we were, usually we distribute a few thousand leaflets. This time it was 7,000-8,000. People agreed with us. I said, what Cheminade is thinking? What is LaRouche doing in the United States? What's happening? So all the mayors were asking this type of questions. Some, the right-wingers or the extreme right-wingers or the ultra-lefties, were angry against us, but were doing it not in the usual arrogant way. They were scared to have to be to oppose us. It's entirely new. And at the meeting, at the general meeting of the mayors, and usually the mayors coming to Paris for these meetings are the ones more favorable to the government. Prime Minister Fillon, who had to speak before them because Sarkozy had escaped in a trip to Saudi Arabia because he did not want to face them. Fillon was booed, whistled at, and mocked. So Sarkozy had to organize a meeting personally with 750 of the right-wing pro-Sarkozy mayors inside the Élysée Palace to appear before the press to be liked by the mayors. But everybody knows it's a fraud. Everybody laughs at it. And at this point, there is an absolute discredit of the majority, but also the opposition.
Have you determined whether some of these cases, the legal cases, the indictment of Chirac, for example, is that possibly a clean hand style operation, or is it really the case that these institutions don't function and they are being swept away, you might say?
The institutions don't function, and the British view is to spread chaos. So it's the two at the same time of what you said. Look, Chirac was a former president. He's before a tribunal. Villepin was former prime minister. He's before a tribunal. Pasqua was interior minister. He sentenced 1 year jail, firm. He would go to jail, and 2 years suspended sentence. So this was never seen in this country. The whole thing is put before the public noses. And when this happens in France, it is a revolutionary situation, and we have it now. So what will happen depends on the capacity for us in France to organize this anger in a positive way and to tell them, to brief them on the four powers agreement, on what LaRouche is doing in the United States. And the webcasts are very, very useful for that. Very important, key. I was in Switzerland, for example, and we met an old contact of ours who was a top guy in the computer section. And he said, I watch LaRouche webcast. A lot of people are watching it around me. And also, I watch the discussions in the basement. I watched the discussions on dynamics, and I liked it a lot. I am following that. And he asked me a lot of questions on that. It was very interesting because these people are more and more coming to understand our thinking and our way of thinking. It's not the same with the mayors, who have no time. In France, people with responsibilities have no time. Their agendas are always overbooked. This is the hierarchical concept, pyramidal concept of France. But in Switzerland, you have this lot of discussions, and in France also, at the level of our people that are close to us, we have more and more discussions of a high level. When they meet us, they don't try to speak about their families or things going or this and that. They're speaking about ideas and asking about ideas because they themselves feel that they have to spread and defend and put their minds behind these ideas and fight for these ideas.
Well, one more question on France, and then Megan, I'll come back to you. But I think when I was there, obviously you had quite a few meetings set up. And one of the things that I found is, especially among economists, that they are watching the situation in the United States closely. They do see that the idea that there was a recovery is a complete fraud. It's not even a statistical fraud. It's just the worst kind of sophistry and lies. But I also found that people were very open to the idea of a return to Glass-Steagall standards, fixed exchange standards. So I presume, Jacques, that this is reality imposing itself, as you said at the beginning of the program, on people who previously thought they knew what they were doing.
Even Sarkozy, before the European Parliament, called for fixed exchange rates. But they talk about that, and then they are hit in the fingers or in other parts of their bodies, and then they don't do what they should be doing. They don't act. So they know, but they don't act. That's a big problem of the oligarchical mentality, that you know what you have to do, but you don't do it. You know, you think certain things that are good, but it's in the framework of a Cartesian block universe. So what you have good dissipates itself over time. So the most interesting people among the economists are those who understand, and one of the persons that you met, who was before the advisor of the French Employers Association, mm-hmm. the top French Employers Association, and who left because he was in disagreement with them, what he understands is that Glass-Steagall means not only separate commercial banks from investment banks, from insurance companies, but it means an organized bankruptcy. And that's a new thing, that people are talking openly now in France about an organizing bankruptcy. They use a more polite way to say it. They said, faillite ordonnée, well-ordered bankruptcy. But they mean it. So that's new. And these are more and more people speaking about it.
And I think also implied in that is an end to bailouts, because they realize that bailouts are doing nothing but building up new speculative bubbles.
Yeah, and people see Conyers, for example, in the left. They see what Conyers said on Obama. They follow what, for example, the Black Congressional Black Caucus is doing. They follow the Ron Paul and Alan Grayson bipartisan initiative to audit the Fed. They see what Peter DiFazio has to say against the policies of Geithner and Larry Summers, and calling for them to be kicked out. He said, I liked it the way he phrased it. He said, we need to lose two more jobs, and then we'll have much more created.
Yes, yes.
So, and people see that this only LaRouche has created the environment where these things could be said. People see LaRouche in France as a prophet at this point, but they don't dare to say it publicly.
Well, I had a sense from that, from the meetings that you and I did together, because we certainly told them these things, and they shouldn't be surprised now to see the opposition emerging in the Congress. Megan, let me give you an opportunity. I know you said you had some things you wanted to ask Jacques, so go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering about this mass strike phenomenon that it seems that you also have in France. I was reading even about this mayor's meeting where these government officials went and were booed by the audience, the prime minister, and the leaflet campaign you guys have around the coming anger leaflet implies that there's really something there. And I was wondering, because here in the United States, you know, there's certain reference points in our own history, which I think does tend to revolve around certain presidencies, the policies of certain presidential administrations that we had, where people have a certain reference point that things were better and things should be like they were then. We should have an attitude towards the, you know, our national policy as we did then, be it, you know, the Washington and the American Revolution or Roosevelt, or we also have the reference point of Kennedy and the space program, which is unique. It's different here than in other places. But I wondered, in France, what is the what's the sort of reference point, that type of reference point that the population in France has? Is it with respect to certain presidential administrations in France, or other figures from, you know, way back, like Colbert? I was just wondering how you guys, how you organize around that and what the cultural reference point is for what we want to do now.
In the reaction of people, there are two main things. The 30 glorious years, as they are called, the 30 years after World War II, the European recovery, and the policies connected to this European recovery, in particular in France, the planning policy and the public credit. You had public credit in France issued until January 3, 1973, where a Pompidou Giscard d'Estaing law banned it, and then the European treaties banned it forever, as long as this Europe continues. So people are starting to understand what public credit is. A friend of ours has issued a report showing that the French debt, where everybody's talking France is indebted, is terrible, it's horrible. He has proved that French debt is due to the piling of interest rates. If you look at 1979, the French debt represented 20% of the gross national product. Today, it's about 80%. So after 1973, the state could have issued this public credit as it was doing before, under a Roosevelt type of policy. If this had continued, our debt would be 20 to 30% of the gross national product, which means that all the debt that the French state has is due to interest that have to be paid to the banks, because they had to sell, instead of getting money from the Bank of France, they had to sell bonds to the banks, and the banks bought the bonds and make a lot of money on the back of the state. So this is understood by people as, it starts to be understood by people as a reference point in the past where there was public credit and there was a recovery. So people, before they were saying, no, it's not possible, it's not the mainstream, you can't go back to the past. Now they are saying, since the 1960s, we went back to the past, and now we should go back to when it was good, which was before. So you have De Gaulle as a reference, Mendes France as a reference, a friend of Roosevelt, and this period where Eisenhower, this is known in France, the 1961 speech of Eisenhower, denouncing the military-industrial complex. And what I tell people, it was not military-industrial, it was military-financial, and people understand it. So you have a lot of discussions on this history of the 20th century. What's very important in what we are doing, and particularly in what you are doing in the basement, is to show that if you want to understand what's at stake, you have to go back 3,000 years ago. I am very much involved in studies about prehistory, or I was when I had time. So for me, it's 2.5 million. But you have to understand this sense of history. And people in France have lost it. Among our youth, for example, I asked once, who was Clemenceau? Is one person capable to say it? And only one of them was capable to say it. So that's the beginning of the 20th century. So what we are doing is really creating a lot of joy in them, because they discover through the Kepler work, through the Bach work, through what was done in the United States, why the United States was in part a project of the best people in France, and now what has to be established as a bridge with United States aside from the Narcissus, from Narcissus 1 and Narcissus 2, Obama and Sarkozy, or Narcissus 3 with Merkel, it's a different character, but it's the same type. So that something has to be done in a way that people will go in depth with ideas. And the new thing is that it's not only the youth, but the boomers or our boomer contact who start to have an idea of what it requires to intervene today in the present history as both a patriot and a world citizen, as Schiller would say, and as Jaurès, the French socialist, who was a more or less the only good socialist in France at the beginning of the 20th century. He was an admirer, and he had not the same ideas on certain things, but he admired Rosa Luxemburg a lot. So he was killed because he denounced the World War I policy of France. So he was killed just before the war. But Jaurès said that some internationalism gets you out of thinking about your fatherland, but a lot of internationalism bring you back to your fatherland, and you have to think how these ideas, universal ideas, have been generated in your culture and within your language, and then you transform your culture or your language if it's inadequate. So he had a sense of that, and these type of discussions are coming back with our work. So it's too restricted. The press never covers us, but through internet we managed to reach quite a big audience. At this point we have 160,000 people coming, 160,000 hits, and about 60,000 people coming in, 60,000 people, different people coming every month in our programs. And now more and more reading the, not only seeing the videos or seeing a lot, for example, of them, where I have seen the Rosa Luxemburg video that you made. We translated it in French with French subtitles. We have a lot of audience for that. Firewall, of course.
Jacques, for the people listening to the program who speak or read French, give them the website they can go to see what you're putting up there.
It's www.solidarité et progrès, in one word, solidaritéetprogres.com.
Okay, and I would encourage people to look at that, even if you don't speak French, just to see what we're doing there. We're down to the last couple of minutes.
LaRouche on Solidarité et Progrès, or LaRouche Movement in France on Google, you find it.
And Jacques, will you have the webcast with a French translation?
Yes.
Okay, so people can see that there also.
We always have the webcast with a French translation since the first webcast, webcast. We had also Elga's webcast. It's more difficult because there is no direct translation in French in Germany, but we have it with a French translation done together with an English translation.
All right, Jacques, we're just down to 2 minutes. What do you think? Do you think in France there's a growing sense that LaRouche's idea of putting Obama under adult supervision is a possibility? Do people have any sense of that?
They have not a sense precisely of that. They have a sense that something should be done with Obama. So when we tell them that, yes, they agree. But we have to tell them.
Okay, and Megan, anything new coming out of the basement in the next couple of weeks?
I hope so. I won't reveal any plans just yet. But
you'll keep us guessing.
Yeah. If I could say one quick thing,
sure.
Just one more thing from
sure.
This morning. Just he also brought up in the context of this earlier discussion the how you develop an idea of human immortality, and that because obviously you're talking about getting Russia, China, India, the United States cooperating, you're dealing with very different cultures and religions. And he said the concept of human immortality, it's really not religious per se, but that it's rooted in this idea of human creativity, which is really best, in terms of a mission for that, it's really best exemplified by this Mars project. So I thought it was a good way of thinking about, you know, why this really is the thing to get the these countries working together.
All right, we're going to have to end it at that. That's a very useful thing for people to think about, this question of immortality. In fact, it's the only way that you can really locate yourself historically, as Jacques says, in 3 million years of history.
Immortality and relativity, there's a lot of work done on Einstein at this point in France.
Good. Well, Jacques, thanks for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to have you. And Megan, thank you for joining
much.
Us. We'll be back next Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern with the LaRouche Show. And don't forget, December 3rd, the next webcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Thank you.